Welcome to Monday. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. What'd you think of that freak show in Iowa on Saturday? Oh my God. And, was it Saturday? T-Paw is gone already, right? T-Paw. Man, you know, the real, that was just a kind of a preview. The real straw poll isn't until, or the, whatever the hell they call it, isn't until, about 6 months from now. What a bunch of jerks. Oh my God. Anyway, our sponsor this first hour is Steve in Southern California. Steve in Southern California. His message, please don't refer to Republicans as cockroaches, as that is very offensive to cockroaches. Or perhaps you could just add, no offense to insects. Okay, Steve. Thanks for the sponsorship, sir. Yeah, it is offensive to cockroaches, isn't it? Huh? Did we haven't talked about this yet. Did we about Michelle Obama and coming in first, and she bought everybody tickets? The way these straw polls work, you have to have a $30 ticket to vote. So she bought a whole bunch of people $30 tickets and brought them in to vote. Isn't this country great? So now she's a winner. Oh, Jesus. I might talk about it a little bit later in the program. It just makes me sick. I've been telling you about I told you last week about the demonstrations in Israel against one of the signs at Rothschild Square in Tel Aviv, I believe, is one of the signs said, walk like an Egyptian, which you can find as much irony in that as you want to. But the strikes and the demonstrations and in some cases the bloody riots that are going on right now globally should be a warning to the power structure in this country and the power structure, I don't care where, should be a very clear warning that the people, that would be the common folk like you and me, are getting to the point where we've had enough. But you know, that tipping point I keep talking about? Maybe we're right on the cusp of that tipping point. Well, anyway, at ynetnews.com, which is an Israeli website, they were reporting, I think yesterday, that a guillotine, the symbol of the French Revolution, has been placed in the center of Tel Aviv's tent city. A guillotine. Turning into one of the biggest attractions in the social protest. Apparently a lot of people are coming to a real guillotine. I'm not talking about a mock-up or a model, a real one with a real blade. You can go to Ynet News, letter Y, netnews.com, and take a look at that sucker. I mean, it's a real guillotine. According to Ynet, the surprising display arrived in Rothschild Boulevard following another long night of protests across the country, this time focusing on contractor conditions. Demonstrators in five different cities in Israel participated in rallies against working conditions, wearing white masks and chanting, contractor companies are organized crime. Contractor company. What is that? What is that in the Israeli system? Is that corporations? I don't know what contractor companies are. But, so a guillotine. Better pay attention, power structure. Better pay attention. Texas Governor Perry, I've been telling you a lot about him. He's a religious fanatic of the most bloody and gory kind. Just an absolute, I mean, his version, this whole apostolic Reformation crowd, their vision of God is somebody who just murders people by the hundreds of thousands and doesn't bat an eye. I mean, this is a really, if you start from the premise that all religion is based on negative things, fear, darkness, sickness, weirdness, the apostolic Reformation movement is the sickest. It is so deep into the dark, furthermost reaches of the id inside. I hope I got that right. Inside your mind, as to render it almost invisible. But it's a Their belief, Perry's belief, Bachman's belief, so many of these bastards, their belief is that the country has to, or the world has to be made ready for the arrival of Jesus. Yeah, Jesus. And in order to do that, there has to be a lot of blood, a lot of gore, a lot of death, a lot of destruction, and a lot of ingathering of all the governments of the world under the firm control of this real scary kind of perverted Christianity. It's just weird stuff. But aside from Perry's craziness about that, over the weekend, he took a swipe at Barack Obama because Obama never served in the military, whereas Rick Perry served as in the Air Force as a captain. Woo! This was at onepeoplesproject.com. Onepeoplesproject.com. Our military affairs correspondent Sharon sent this to me. But you can come up with a million responses to that Obama had no military experience and Rick Perry was a captain in the Air Force. But here's a good one. The Democratic Party in Texas already has responded. The voter ID efforts, you know, where you got to have a photo ID in order to vote, right? These efforts across the country have been a contentious issue to begin with, but 2 days before Perry decided to take this shot at Obama, the Democrats released a tape where the head of the Texas Secretary of State's Election Division said that a Veterans Administration photo ID will not be an acceptable form of ID when you're trying to vote, per Texas's new voter ID law. Now, as bad as the law is in the first place, how do you explain to veterans that their photo ID card is no good? How do you do that? There's going to be trouble in River City. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with V. And that stands for voter identification card. You better watch out, Mr. Rick. You better watch out. You get a couple of these combat veterans who are already suffering with PTSD, who come back to Texas and decide they want to vote, and show up at a registrar's office or at a polling place on election day with their voter ID card and their military ID card. And they are told, sorry, mister, that ID card, your military photo ID card is no good in here. Ooh, son of a bitch. Lights out. Also got an email here from Dr. Saxman. I'm going to share with you in a second. He's a sax player with the Count Basie Orchestra, who, according to his email, he hasn't been working a whole lot this summer because of organizational screw-ups and, you know, the usual stuff. When you are a touring musician, sometimes it's a little difficult to keep everything going, right? So I'm going to share that with you, Dr. Saxman. Also, I got a Prairie 2 thing here. And let me ask you something. Who's familiar with Titus Lucretius Carus? Titus Lucretius Carus. He was born about a century before Jesus was born, a Roman. Titus Lucretius Carus. Anybody out there? Can I see some hands? No? Okay. Well, I'm in that group too. I just might share something with you about Titus Lucretius Carus a little bit later in the program tonight, or maybe a little bit later on in the week. I'm not sure. But it's something that you need to know. You might want to look him up if you want to. Look up Lucretius. Lucretius, that'll give you an idea. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. To have ambition was my ambition, but I had nothing to show for my dreams. Time with my girl, I spent it well. You must be joking. Oh, man, you must be joking. The good life was so elusive. Handouts, they got me down. So I got into camouflage. The girls the hour. Get some emails from people that say Titus in the Bible. No. This guy was walking around Rome about 100 years before Jesus was born. Titus Lucretius, he goes by the name Lucretius Carus. Okay, from Prairie 2, subject line is taken 40 years and the end is near. He writes, we often talk about the 30 years of Reaganomics that destroyed the middle class, but today is a 40-year anniversary that is of great significance as it denotes the real beginning of the end. On this day in 1971, Richard Nixon stopped redeeming U.S. dollars in gold for foreign governments. He claimed he feared a run on gold. Supposedly, the Brits had asked for $2 billion in gold at $35 an ounce the day before. This effectively ended the Bretton Woods Agreement on Currency and Trade, named for a small town in New Hampshire where all the Allied governments met in 1944 to lay out the post-World War II economy. Nixon tapes reveal that he hoped that massive currency printing by the Federal Reserve, once free of needing to pay in gold, would stimulate job growth, with unemployment having spiked from 4% to 6%. Ah, the good old days. To keep the stock market from panicking, he also announced a 90-day wage price freeze, and the tapes reveal that the Nixon people spent most of their time not in debate over the consequences of this action, but rather if it was wise to announce it by preempting Bonanza on Sunday night. This is back in the day when Bonanza, a third of the population of the country watched it. The 90-day wage price freeze was really a PR campaign to blame labor unions and farmers for inflation and not the Wall Street banks who are really to blame. This turned into a 1,000-day hodgepodge of government regulations that favored the big banks and corporations and tanked the economy for everybody else. It produced double-digit inflation that persisted for 10 years, and this is where the term stagflation comes from. Defined as high inflation and no growth. The bad economy, of course, opened the door for Reaganomics, which was more of the same bad policies on steroids. It's popular to blame LBJ and Nixon for trying to hide the real cost of the Vietnam War by spending lots of U.S. dollars overseas and then inflating the currency to keep from paying for it in real dollars or gold. It's more widespread than that, as the big Wall Street banks and the large corporations were simply manipulating the system to enrich themselves. A war was just one more profit center. The early 70s was when the financial services sector really started to grab hold as inflation required everybody to start borrowing money to stay in business. Credit cards became commonplace as mom-and-pop businesses could not continue to provide credit, and this opened the door for the corporations to start pushing mom-and-pop out. The whole thing was systematic and thorough because it was official policy that the billionaire... They really were only multimillionaires in those days. The billionaire-funded think tanks pushed hard for this agenda with government. Political funding flowed from the rich in corporate America to the Republican Party. And any Democrats that would look the other way. Nixon actually masqueraded as a liberal and even called himself a Keynesian on economics. The right called him a Marxist. He was neither. He let the Democratic Congress have liberal programs like the EPA and even offered a health care system identical to so-called Obamacare. In return, Congress looked the other way when he set in motion an economic policy that FDR and Keynes referred to as economic royalism. So here we are today, with the top 0.75% holding 45 trillion in wealth, more than the bottom 90% of us, with another 6 trillion hidden overseas. This is expected to more than double by the end of the decade to 100 trillion. The very top 0.5% are the really wealthy that can borrow money at zero interest, evade almost all taxes, and totally intimidate the government. You wonder why Obama doesn't save us from this? The country was long gone before Obama came to office. Only the retaking of Congress by the people could save us. But the majority of the country think that they are in the same class with the top 1%, or could be, if they just pull on their bootstraps the right way. They don't realize that their bootstraps are owned by somebody else, and that no amount of pulling will help them. PrairieNumeral2.com. So there's nothing Obama can do? Is that what Bruce is saying? Sure sounds like it. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Tonight, how much he hates these people, it's Mike Malloy.
So I'm starting to see the humor rather than hate them, except for the fact that I'll always hate them because they're destroying my country, or they have destroyed it. This Perry Bachman team, there's never been anything like this in American politics, ever, on that level. This hour is sponsored by Steve in Southern California. Here's his message. Please don't refer to Republicans as cockroaches, as that is very offensive to cockroaches. Or perhaps you could just add, no offense to insects. I'll try to remember that. Steve in Southern California. Thanks, Steve. Very kind of you to sponsor an hour. From Dr. Saxman with the Count Basie Orchestra. How's it going, bro? Hope you're well and the family is good. We just had 11 inches of rain around New York, but where we live in Yonkers, we're on high ground, so just the plants on the terrace got soaked. We're growing tomatoes, hot peppers, herbs, stuff like that. It's fun. The Basie Band is not traveling as much this year, a combo of mismanagement and the economy. Hope it picks up next year. But I'm keeping my ears open for that high-paying rock gig still. We'll leave for Japan on September 1st. That's good. We'll be playing the Tokyo Jazz Festival, Tokyo Blue Note, Nagoya Blue Note, and a benefit for our Japanese friends to help do our part for the tsunami victims. I'll keep you up to date on what I learned from the people about the situation there. I think Dylan Radigan has done lost his fool mind. He's gone over the edge. He sounds like you. But on television? Wonder how long before he gets fired. To say I'm disappointed about Obama's little town hall with the people in Minnesota today would actually be an understatement. I'm disappointed about my disappointment. Actually, I'm saddened. You know how proud I am of this man. But he ran down all these Republican talking points. Must spend less, must start a job program, no mention of NAFTA. And as Perot said, that sucking sound we hear is our jobs going south. Well, east, actually. No mention that without U.S. manufacturing jobs or regulations on imports and exports, we'll never get enough jobs to rebuild this economy. No mention of maintaining Medicare and Social Security. No mention of the wars which are really causing the economic drain. Well, actually, he did talk about two unpaid wars, yet I don't know why he won't point a finger directly at Republicans in the Tea Party. But anyhow, you get the point. I believe the corporate power structure not only has their hands around our necks, the political necks, and the world's necks. It's frightening to realize that most people don't even understand how these corporations are actually running this three-ring circus, and that the damage these capitalist businesses are racking up just can't be stopped. I know you have a young daughter. You must be concerned about the future. This is just some crazy crap. Rick Perry, the guy who used to be a Democrat, who has never been in a debate, at least that's what I heard, who keeps pretending to pray about everything, the guy who supports intelligent design as a scientific theory, and the guy who once worked for Al Gore's reelection is, as George Carlin would say, completely full of blank. Then you got Mitt Romney, who has no spine, who has never been without money, and lives on top of the hill and looks down on the rest of us from his castle. And you got crazy-ass Michelle Bachmann with her husband. Jeez, that guy. The closet door is wide open there. And now they toss in Rick Perry. It's hard to believe that the country is looking at these three fools saying, yeah, they could be president. Bro, these are some crazy times. Just venting. Just venting. Later on, Dr. Saxman. Yeah, just venting. I hear you. Oh, what the hell? Why not? Why not bring this up? We got a couple of minutes here. It's Monday, right? Who cares? Who cares if I bring this up? I think I'll bring it up. It's not necessarily about politics, although it really is. In August 8th issue of The New Yorker, Stephen Greenblatt writes this piece titled The Answer Man. And it's about how an ancient poem written a couple thousand years ago was recently rediscovered. Well, not recently, about 500 years ago, and the world swerved. You know what I'm talking about? Never heard of this. His name, Titus Lucretius Carus. And he wrote a poem that's now 2,000 years old. It's entitled On the Nature of Things, or De Rerum Natura, if you want to use the Latin. Lucretius was born, Greenblatt writes, about a century before Jesus. He was emphatically not our contemporary. He thought that worms, for example, were spontaneously generated from wet soil. He thought that earthquakes were the result of winds caught in underground caverns and that the sun circled the earth. But at its heart, this poem, On the Nature of Things, persuasively laid out what seemed to be a strikingly modern understanding of the world. Every page reflected a core scientific vision, a vision of atoms randomly moving in an infinite universe, imbued with a poet's sense of wonder. Wonder did not depend on the dream of an afterlife. Wonder did not depend on the dream of an afterlife. In Lucretius, it welled up out of a recognition that we are made of the same matter as the stars and the oceans and all things else. And this recognition was the basis for the way he thought we should live, not in fear of the gods, but in pursuit of pleasure, in avoidance of pain. Now, the poem that he wrote was apparently was lost. For a while, it was thought, once it was discovered that such a poem existed, that it was thought to have been lost irrevocably. But then it was found. And this retrieval of this poem after many centuries is something one is tempted to call a miracle. But Lucretius did not believe in miracles. He thought that nothing could violate the laws of nature. He posited instead what he called a swerve. Lucretius' principal word for it was a clinamen, an unexpected, unpredictable movement of matter. Now, the rediscovery of the poem prompted such a swerve, the cultural shift of the Renaissance. This is when it was discovered, right before the Renaissance. The cultural shift of that period of time is notoriously difficult to define, but it was characterized in part by a decidedly Lucretian pursuit of beauty and pleasure, the Renaissance. The pursuit shaped the dress and the etiquette of courtiers, the language of the liturgy, the design and decoration of everyday objects. It suffused Leonardo da Vinci's scientific and technological explorations, Galileo's vivid dialogues on astronomy, Francis Bacon's ambitious research projects, and Richard Hooker's theology, even works that were seemingly unrelated to any aesthetic ambition, like Machiavelli's analysis of political strategy, or Walter Raleigh's description of Guiana, Robert Burton's encyclopedic account of mental illness. All of it was crafted in such a way to produce pleasure. And this pursuit, with its denial of Christian asceticism, enabled people to turn away from a preoccupation with angels and demons and to focus instead on things in this world, to conduct experiments without worrying about infringing on God's jealously guarded secrets, to question authorities and challenge received doctrines, to contemplate without terror the death of the soul. The recovery of this poem on the nature of things is a story of how the world swerved in a new direction. The agent of change was not a revolution, an implacable army at the gates, or landfall of an unknown continent. When it occurred nearly 600 years ago, the key event was muffled and almost invisible, tucked away behind walls in a remote place. A short, genial, cannily alert man in his late 30s reached out one day, took a very old manuscript off a shelf, and saw with excitement what he had discovered. That was all. But it was enough. By that time, Lucretius's ideas had been out of circulation for centuries. In the Roman Empire, the literacy rate was never high, and after the sack of Rome in 410 CE, it began to plummet. It's possible for a whole culture to turn away from reading and writing. As the empire crumbled and Christianity became ascendant, as cities decayed, trade declined, and an anxious populace scanned the horizon for barbarian armies, the ancient system of education fell apart. What began as downsizing went on to wholesale abandonment in ancient Rome. Schools closed. Libraries and academies shut their doors. Professional grammarians and teachers of rhetoric found themselves out of work. Scribes were no longer given manuscripts to copy. There were more important things to worry about than the fate of books. Lucretius' poem, so incompatible with any cult of the gods, was attacked, ridiculed, burned, or ignored, and like Lucretius himself, eventually forgotten. The idea of pleasure and beauty that the work advanced was forgotten with it. Theology provided an explanation for the chaos of the Dark Ages. Human beings were by nature corrupt. Inheritors of the sin of Adam and Eve, they richly deserved every miserable catastrophe that befell them. God cared about human beings just as a father cared about his wayward children. And the sign of that care was anger. More on this when we come back. Stick around. This is very, very... I read this article three times. More when we come back. Love's the only engine of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cold. It's over, it ain't going in it.
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Steve in Southern California, who has a message. Please don't refer to Republicans as cockroaches, as that is very offensive to cockroaches. Or perhaps you could just add, no offense to insects. Try to remember that. Thanks, Steve, in Southern California. Back to this Titus Lucretius Icarus, whose poem on the nature of things was discovered after being lost for about 1,500 years. It was discovered about 500 or 600 years ago. It had a profound effect on just about everything that transpired during the Renaissance. Everything from politics to art to science. During the Dark Ages, theology provided an explanation for the chaos. Human beings were by nature corrupt, inheritors of the sin of Adam and Eve. They richly deserved every miserable catastrophe that befell them. It was only through pain and punishment that a small number could find the narrow gate to salvation. A hatred of pleasure-seeking, a vision of God's providential rage, and an obsession with the afterlife. These were the death knells of everything Lucretius represented. Sound familiar? Yeah, it's here. On the Nature of Things is not an easy read, totaling 7,400 lines. It is written in hexameters, the standard unrhymed 6-beat lines in which Latin poets like Virgil and Ovid, imitating Homer's Greek, cast their epic poetry. Divided into 6 untitled books, the poem yokes together moments of intense lyrical beauty, philosophical meditations on religion, pleasure, and death, and scientific theories of the physical world, the evolution of human societies, the perils and joys of sex, and the nature of disease. The language is often knotty and difficult, the syntax complex, and the overall intellectual ambition astoundingly high. The stuff of the universe Lucretius proposed is an infinite number of atoms moving randomly through space like dust motes in a sunbeam, colliding, hooking together, forming complex structures, breaking apart again in a ceaseless process of creation and destruction. There is no escape from this process. Lucretius also believed there is no master plan, no divine architect, no intelligent design. Nature restlessly experiments, and we are simply one among the innumerable results. Quote from the poem, "We're all sprung from celestial seed. All have that same father from whom our fostering mother, Earth, receives liquid drops of water, and then teeming brings forth bright corn and luxuriant trees in the race of mankind, brings forth all the generations of wild beasts, providing food with which all nourish their bodies and lead a sweet life and beget their offspring." End quote. Like that. In a universe so constituted, Lucretius argued, it is absurd to think that the earth and its inhabitants occupy a central place, or that the world was purpose-built to accommodate human beings. Quote, "There's no reason to set humans apart from other animals. No hope of bribing or appeasing the gods, no place for religious fanaticism, no calls for ascetic self-denial, no justification for dreams of limitless power or perfect security, no rationale for wars of conquest or self-aggrandizement, no possibility of triumphing over nature. Instead, he wrote, human beings should conquer their fears, accept the fact that they are themselves and all the things they encounter are transitory, and embrace the beauty and the pleasure of the world. And there's more. Just a taste of the article in the August 8th issue of The New Yorker. Now I'm going to have to find the poem. How long? What'd I say, Kathy? 750... lines of, no, it was more than that. It's huge. Oh, 7,400 lines. And I had trouble reading Shakespeare's Julius Caesar and Taming of the Shrew and the rest of it, but when I read that article, I just thought, wow, I had never heard of Lucretius. Anybody else out there? I mean, some of you folks are a lot smarter than I am and much better educated, but I had never heard of Titus Lucretius Carus. I got an email here from, is it Bill's Bees? Is it Bill's Bees? I think it is. No, it's, yeah, Bill's Bees. He said, I had to read it my senior class at Cornwall on Hudson, New York in 1956. And I thought I had a progressive English class when I was in high school. Now I'm going to have to get it. It is, what caught my attention about this this article, and now about the poet himself, is how pro-life it is, how pro-pleasure and acceptance it is. Not pleasure in a stupid, mindless way, but pleasure in being alive. When compared to all this religious garbage and darkness and pain and murderous activities and all the negativity that is every single organized religion, especially the three of the book. It's just murderous, hate-filled crap. And now we have four candidates who are trying to convince enough brain-dead Americans that they have been ordained by God to become president of the United States. And I still have people who say, well, you're just a goddamn atheist, which I love it when it's put that way. And to those people, I just say, you know, in my inimitable way, oh, bite me. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Wait a minute, are they working? Oh no!
Never mind.
Well, we were going to try, but this is the Malloy studio where anything that can go wrong will go wrong. This hour is sponsored by John Miller, whose message, Mike, thank you. I can't say that enough. Keep at it. We need you doing what you do. Thanks, John. Thanks for the sponsorship. Very kind. By the way, if you do not want me to read the name as it appear, your name as it appears, just, you know, let us know. If you don't, I just assume it's okay. So there you go. Thanks, John. Warren Buffett, did you see this in the Times today? Stop coddling the super rich. Woo! Talk about a traitor to his class, right? Of course, he's not that way. He says it's time that these rich, super rich, start paying their fair share. We've been talking about this for a long time. Not us, not you and me, because it's as obvious as, I don't know, 2 + 2 = 4. But, you know, we may be way past any ability to get that as Prairie 2 was talking, that 1/3 of 1%, the top 1/3 of 1% that now sits on $40 trillion globally. It may be way past the time where anything can be done short of violent, bloody, insane, crazed, screaming, frothing at the mouth, global revolution. I don't know. I really don't. But the people who have used over the past 100 years, who have used capitalism to the extent that they have, where it stopped being a system of economic development, became a system of economic exploitation. Of course, that's what it was to begin with. But the joke was that the average slob, you and me, we just didn't understand that. You know, I still get emails from people that say, why don't you go live in North Korea? Why don't you go live in North Korea? You don't know what capitalism is. Blah, 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 blah. But Warren Buffett, maybe these dumb bastards will grant that Warren Buffett knows what capitalism is. I don't know. But he says some things that are not foreign to you or to me. Among them, he says, while the poor and middle class fight for us in Afghanistan, and while most Americans struggle to make ends meet, we mega-rich continue to get our extraordinary tax breaks. Some of us are investment managers who earn billions from our daily labors, but are allowed to classify our income as, quote, carried interest, end quote, thereby getting a bargain 15% tax rate. Others own stock index futures for 10 minutes and have 60% of their gain taxed at 15% as if they'd been longtime investors. And he goes on, and he goes on. You know, and I read this today, and I, sure, okay, what is Warren Buffett worth? 30, 40 billion? I have no idea. He said, back in the 80s and 90s, tax rates for the rich were far higher, and my percentage rate was in the middle of the pack. According to a theory I sometimes hear, I should have thrown a fit and refused to invest because of this elevated tax rate on capital gains and dividends. See, that's what the right-wing pissants are telling us now. He said, I didn't refuse, nor did others. I've worked with investors for 60 years, and I have yet to see anyone, not even when capital gains rates were 39.9% in 1976 and 77, I've never seen anyone shy away from a sensible investment because of the tax rate on the potential gain. People invest to make money, and potential taxes have never scared them off. And to those who argue that higher rates hurt job creation, I would note that a net of nearly 40 million jobs were created between 1980 and 2000. You know what's happened since. Lower tax rates and far lower job creation. I just don't understand why people still gather in these little brain-dead clutches of individuals and listen to a scumsucker like Rick Perry or a psychopath like Michelle Bachmann or any of these right-wingers, any of them, Newt Gingrich, Ron Paul, any of them, talking about how the high tax rates that we're facing today, which are some of the lowest in the history of the Republic, certainly in modern history, that the high tax rates are stopping the creation of jobs. And then you have someone like Warren Buffett come out and say, that's never happened. Ever. We are so illiterate in this country. We are so economically illiterate. We don't have a clue. And let some demagogue get up there on a platform and start talking about Jesus would have been a venture capitalist, or Jesus believed in capital gains taxes should be eliminated, or Jesus this or Jesus that. And coupled with this sick, perverted form of predatory capitalism, and man, you got a winning combination. People in this country are stupid. They're scared to death. Not so scared of what's going on. They're scared they're going to burn in hell when they die. Ooh, I gotta be saved. Amen. I'm gonna burn in hell if I'm not saved. What is wrong? What happened to the ability to think clearly? What happened? But that toxic combination of this perverted, sick religion, this apostolic reformation, coupled with this murderous capitalism. You have two murderous concepts. This branch of Christianity that is so sick. And then this economic theory that is so destructive. And you put the two of them together, what do you have? Well, you have the end of the world. That's what you have. The end of the world as we know it, REM said. And yet people line up for this. People line up for their message, their dose of fear and loathing and terror and greed and lust and rage and, if I don't vote Republican, I'm going to go to hell. I get so tired of railing against it. Don't you? But it doesn't do any good. Oh, by the way, the phones are fixed now. 877-996-2556 if you want to call in. It does no good to rail against it. People who are that ignorant, who are that just completely brain smashed, where they can no longer think clearly about their impending soul death, if that's what you want to call it, and the fact that they're never going to be a billionaire or a millionaire. That what they're going to be is just a working stiff, if they can find a job, who's going to be exploited over and over and over again by capitalism. Over and over again. And when they die, there's no reward. God damn it, you're not going to get anything except the void. And you won't know that because, well, you know why. We'll be right back.
In God we trust, so we ask his help in everything we do. Now we got freedom of religion. I reckon that means that we must tolerate the atheist and Jew. But Jesus is the man and our salvation, and every war we wage is in his name. We think his Bible should be taught in every nation, and we'll bomb anyone who doesn't feel the same. Welcome to Jesus' land, where we all love thy neighbor if thy neighbors understand. We won't let too many Mexicans across the Rio Grande. Welcome to Jesus' land. Now dump
all those weebers.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
Mike Malone.
Walk, and you talk that talk. You knocks me out. Out off of my feet. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
21 before the hour, or past the hour, or near the hour, or something like that. 21 past the hour. To the phones. Ralph is in Danbury, Connecticut. Hello, Ralph. Ralph?
Hi.
There's Ralph. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Hi. Yeah. I was watching, you know, I guess I'm a, I have a lot of self-hatred. I was watching the Fox debate
really?
Last Thursday night.
Yeah.
And there was something on there that just drove me crazy, and I'd like to share it with your audience.
Sure.
Michelle Bachmann was asked what I thought was a very good question, which surprised me coming from Fox. But the question was about her comment that she made about submission.
Submission.
To her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was she came out with a. I have to give her credit. It was a good answer for somebody who has herself in a corner with that statement.
Mm-hmm.
Her answer was that her view was that. It was mutual respect. That's what she viewed.
Right. In other words, Ralph, she didn't answer the question. She gave one of those sideways answers. And let me just say, you know, for the first time ever, I thought that the questioners, all of whom had a connection to Fox, or at least two of them did, that they really did ask good questions. I was blown away that Chris Wallace and who's the other guy from Fox?
Byron something, yeah.
Yeah, that they really asked some decent questions. They never got a decent answer from anybody, but I was just shocked, you know, kind of like fair and balanced. Wow, what's this?
but that answer that she gave,
right,
which was lauded by Fox later on after the debate, they thought her answer was brilliant.
Right.
But that's not, you know, we all know that's not what the Bible's talking about.
Yeah.
Submission does not, in the Bible, it's not referring to mutual respect.
No, it's not.
It's talking about a female being owned by her husband.
Ownership, sure, of course.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
and it's not just the Christian religion that believes that. All three religions of the book are people of the book, the Jews, the Muslims, the Christians. The fundamentalists in all three religions pretty much agree with that, that women are dust in the wind. They're nothing except vessels that men can impregnate so they can carry on the function of the tribe. It's insane.
Right.
And if Michelle Bachmann were president and her husband said to her one night in bed, I want you to start bombing Iran tomorrow because God told me to tell you this, I will guarantee you tomorrow morning Michelle Bachmann would try to start bombing Iran.
Right, and then on Meet the Press yesterday, I thought Nick Gregory did a great job because he didn't let her squirm away. He just kept asking the same questions over and over about her views on gays.
I didn't see that.
And, yeah, it was fantastic. He just kept coming right back. And she did not answer.
Huh.
She would not answer. She just kept repeating the same talking points. I am running for the presidency of the United States. You know, that. So she, in my opinion, she's out.
Well, that's what a robot does. Their prime directive, this robotic mind that all of these freaks have, is to repeat maybe 8 different memes over and over again, no matter what they're asked. It's maddening,
exactly.
And yet people are going to vote for her.
Yeah. You know, I'll just leave you with this thought. I wish it were the year, instead of close to 2000 AD, I really wish I were alive around 3000 AD. Because I've always had this belief that all of this madness that we're going through with religion, which is really starting to fade out, it's just starting to fade out now. But by that time, 1,000 years from now, I think they'll look back at this time as, you know, the same way we look back at the Middle Ages and the Dark Ages. It's so frustrating that we're at the end. In some ways, I think we're at the end of the religious era, but it's you know, their proponents are trying to keep it going for as long as they can, and it's really sad and frustrating.
It's also very, very destructive.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so destructive. So, yeah, I hear you loud and clear. Thanks, Ralph. I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Yeah, submission. Remember the promise keepers who twisted themselves into pretzels trying to explain the relationship between husbands and wives, and that the women had to submit, and the husbands would. I forget exactly how they twisted themselves into pretzels, but the husbands would be submissive leaders, submissive dominators, or just a complete slicing and dicing of anything remotely resembling reason, logic, or the English language. It was just, these people just turned my stomach. I mean, they literally give me acid, you know, just acid stomach. You know, I have to reach for the bicarb. Are you people goddamn real? Do you really believe this stuff? What is wrong with you?
Jesus votes Republican and he saved us from Al Gore. And he believes in trickle down and shipping jobs offshore. He wishes all them unemployed would stop trying to tax his wealth. Your brother's keeper just don't apply because it's everybody for himself. Just said and got me
Here's Mikey.
Yeah, okay.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by John Miller. His message, Mike, thank you. Can't say that enough. Keep at it. We need you doing what you do. Thank you, John. Very kind of you to write and to sponsor. I got one for you here. This was, who sent this to me? Jerry sent this to me as a salient trivia question with historical relevance. Anyone who puts all that in the subject line, I know that whatever he or she's going to write about is going to be not your average email. But what Jerry wrote was a trivia question that we could use for a Friday night. And Jerry, I appreciate it, but it's a little too esoteric, I think. Well, it's a little bit too literate. Let me put it that way. Here's the question. Let's just see if anybody can send an answer to this. What newspaper does Farmer Jones of Animal Farm read? According to George Orwell, what newspaper does Farmer Jones of Animal Farm read? Now, if you get the right answer, you don't get a free podcast, but subscription, but it's just a little bit too deep, Jerry. If you had not provided the answer, I wouldn't know either. Sherry's in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello, Sherry.
Oh, hi, hi, hi.
Yes, indeed.
I'm just such a long-term fan. I just can't tell you thank you enough.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate the fact that you're out there, Sherry. You must be
many times.
You must be listener number 32 or 33. We have 37 listeners, so you're probably number 32, right?
Oh, surely not.
But anyway, the reason you called is about Christian hypocrisy.
Yeah, you know what's really been bugging me lately? I don't know why I was so blind to it most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But the last few years, what I started noticing is these, whatever you want to call them, you know, they call themselves Christian, but I think they're all reincarnated from Roman crusaders.
Mm.
You know, the thing is, I don't know, a week or two ago, that guy was in the news again. He apparently gives 90% instead of 10%.
Oh, yeah. What's his name? Warren. Rick Warren.
Yeah.
The purpose-driven life.
And he was pointing out, well, that might be easy to do if you're making thousands and thousands of dollars a month.
You've got to consider the context. It's a scam. He's a liar. He's selling a package of crap that he expects people to buy. I'm sure when he's talking about, I really don't care what he does with his money. That's his business. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, the larger thing that is bugging the stuff out of me the last 2 years, you know, you had a caller call in once and say, you know, something about it's not cool for men to be gay, that's in Exodus 7, and it also says you can sell your daughter, you know,
right. And
it's just right in the same chapter. And that really got me going because, you know, you're not even, you know, the early Christians, it says somebody will call in with the right reference. I think it's in Acts. It says they did not own anything. They shared everything
in common. Sure.
So let's see how many people want to raise their hand and walk down the aisle if they knew they'd have to do that, you know?
I don't think any.
That's just one point right there, okay?
Right.
Another thing is, that drives me nuts, is they keep referring to Old Testament stuff as if we're all Jewish, you know? And nothing against Jewish people, I'm just saying, many of us, you know, it's a weird, whatever mix of a couple things Jesus said, and then the rest is Jewish. Okay. This wives submit to your husbands. In Ephesians, which is I think where that comes from, it actually says husband and wife submit to each other.
Well, that's madness.
And why do you ever never hear, oh, my wife wanted me to go to the store, so I submitted to her request. You know, when do you ever hear that little testimony in church?
Well, that's not really what it's about. What it's about is ownership. That's all it's about. Women.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
but
women.
It says right there in their own King James Version.
Right.
Husbands and wives submit to each other.
Right. It's all, you know, I even hate talking about it, trying to rationalize something as bizarre and weird as organized religion, especially the three religions of the book, the Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. As far as I'm concerned, they're all madness, just complete delusional madness, put together by a bunch of tribes wandering around the deserts eating magic mushrooms 5,000 years ago.
Okay.
You know,
it's the first time I really read the Old Testament. I mean, it's a mess. It's just a mess.
It's all about,
you know,
it's about murder and slaughter and genocide and incest and rape and lust it just goes, you know, it's just this sewer. There should be an X rating. There should be no Bibles allowed anywhere near children. No anything having to do with this death dealing madness around children. I got to leave there, Sherry. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Ay, ay, ay. Crazy, crazy, crazy. I get a lot of people who write to me and say, Mike, you know, I love your program. You really are, you know, we're right on the same page for the most part, politically, yada, yada, yada. But you have to be so anti-Christian. I mean, so it makes it so hard to listen to you when you go off on your tangents about Christianity. You know, I've been going to church for 40 years and yes, I was saved and I get these emails and I just think, oh my God, how can you do that? I honestly mean this. I don't understand how a rational mind, and by rational, I mean one that's been cut free from those chains and ropes that kids are lashed to when they're little. You know, Molly has kids in second grade asking her, are you saved? You know, and we've instructed Molly to just look at him and say, I invest, you know, and let it go at that. Or some smart-ass remark without getting into an argument. She said, well, Daddy, shouldn't I tell him that that's all nonsense? No, don't tell him that. But this is insane. They take children and turn them into these little fear-besotted tiny humans who are wandering around terrified that this vicious, murderous God is going to throw them away if they don't, I don't know, do something.
I think it can be best summed up by one of my favorite bumper stickers. This is the best comeback you can come up with, I think. It's just,
yeah.
Born okay the first time.
Born okay the first time. Well, you know, if I had it to do over, if I could design, I'd probably, if I could really be born again, I'd make some changes. I think I'd make my eyes blue instead of green. You know, I'd go for that. I think I would have given myself more of an inclination towards a very muscular body. I would have been taller. Is that what they, no, that's not what they mean, is it? It's just madness. Jim's in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hi, Jim.
Hello. I will definitely get to the point I told your streamer about, but can I comment on what you were just talking about?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Is there not a parallel to young children today, second graders, coming home telling their moms and dads that the world is dying because of the environmental movement? I mean, is that not the same basic rationale that's triggering...
Well, no. One is real. The one you just cited is real. The other one is fictional nonsense.
It's real because you believe it's real. It's been disproven.
No, no, I can't do this. Sorry, Jim. Goodbye. No, I can't. I'm sorry, pal. No. Take your argument someplace else. Okay, I'm just not interested. No. You know, global warming deniers have no place on this program ever, under any circumstances, never, not even a tiny bit. No, no, no. Just go away. Go somewhere else. Go, I don't know, any place. But don't come here. No, 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 no. Global warming deniers, global climate change, it ain't happening types, you're not welcome, under any circumstances. So just, you know, Jesus. No, I don't like, you know, a lot of people say, well, you ought to just keep those people on, string them along. No, no, no. This is not that kind of a program. I'm not going to do it. You know, I cannot be around, even on a phone, that kind of ignorance. I can't do it. And I'm not going to do it for listeners' entertainment. Why don't you play with it, Mike? No, no. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by John Miller. His message, Mike, thank you. I can't say that enough. Keep at it. We need you doing what you do. John, thank you. I can't say that enough either. Thanks for the sponsorship and the kind message. All right, Tom in Marietta, Georgia, got it. E pluribus unum, one from many. He, listener number 38, he identifies himself. Farmer Jones newspaper in Animal Farm, the now defunct News of the World. Way to go, Tom. Where are we? Oh, next hour, coming up. What do we got here? Kolob, K-O-L-O-B. I'm going to mention that. And what else have I got here? Oh, yeah. Well, guess what happened to the, Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party. Remember, we talked about them last week. They were the ones that decided they might mount a challenge against Barack Obama from the left. What do you suppose? Well, you're way ahead of me. Al Gore also dropped by the Aspen Institute media forum titled Networks on Citizenship and had some things to say. I want to share that with you a little bit, as much as I can get past the censors, which isn't very much. Gore really got a little bit irritated with some folks. It's very interesting. And also, I'm going to give you something that will show you the sick kind of logic, or perverted kind of logic, quote-unquote, that Republicans use. You'll like it. It's going to be a fun hour. Stick around. Jeremy's in Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike. What's going on?
You are.
Oh, thanks.
Right.
I called because I heard just a few minutes ago on the news that Newt came out today, I guess, or this weekend, and had said that the reason his campaign is facing such downfalls is that he's getting all these gotcha questions thrown at him.
Oh, yeah, right. It's always, you know, with Newt Gingrich, it's always been this way. It's always somebody else's fault. But by extension, every Republican puts it that way. Every conservative puts it that way. It's always somebody else's fault. There's some other reason other than their own incompetence for their ultimate and eventual and immediate downfall or destruction or whatever. It's always somebody else's fault. Ever notice that?
I notice that a lot.
Yeah.
I've also noticed that when you bring up the subject of global warming in any sense, someone calls in and says, I was telling your screener.
Yeah.
And usually right there, that to me tells me they're going to be gone in a few seconds.
Right.
So they can never say Kathy or anything like that. They're your screener.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I'll have to remember that. I hadn't noticed that pattern. But I can't stand that. I mean, I just can't stand it. Was it Wellington, New Zealand? They just had a major snowfall that they haven't had in like, I don't know, in forever. The satellite pictures of the Arctic ice shelf, the summer ice, is practically gone. And people insist on saying that there's no such thing. I mean, what the hell does it take? What do you have to do?
It doesn't matter if you get less snow or more snow in the winter. Here in Vermont, for sake this year, or for instance this year, we had a tremendous amount of snow. And people say, oh, there's global warming for you.
Yeah.
Making fun of it.
Exactly.
Well, on the reverse end, it all melted, and we had like 10 feet of water above flood stage here in Vermont. So everyone that lives on Lake Champlain had to call FEMA this year for it.
Yeah. Well, if people just understood what the nature, calling it global warming is essentially correct, but it's global climate change. And as one of the manifestations is an incredibly increased amount of moisture, whether it comes as water or snow or ice, it doesn't matter. But people don't get that. How did we produce such a nation of absolute scientific morons? How did this happen? Wow.
Fox News.
Well, it's got to be deeper than that. I mean, where people refuse to even let the idea dangle across their eyeballs and have somebody who can explain it to them. This is what global climate change is. Now, listen up, because your very life depends on it, and they won't do it. Maybe that's why, because their lives depend on it. Maybe that's it. It's astonishing. They'll tell you, well, it's not in the Bible, so it can't be true. Jeremy, thanks, man. I appreciate your call. Science, no. Freaky Dark Ages religion, yes! Why? What happened? I mean, the past 600 years, we'd been going so in the right direction, right? Huh? Oh, lots of murder and mayhem on this poor little blue dot. But we were kind of maybe drifting overall in the right direction, except for the murder and the mayhem, except for the genocide and all right, maybe we weren't going the right direction. At least we were going in the right direction from a science versus religious superstition paradigm. But all of a sudden, it seems all of a sudden, historically, I mean, in historic time, it's been all of a sudden, science can just, you know, kiss the ass of religion rather than the way it should be, the other way around. And who's suffering for it? I usually let this stuff wait till Wednesday, but I just couldn't do it. All right, stick around. We'll be back right after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. Seven past the hour. Just can't get over it. Michelle Bachmann winning the, if that's what you want to call it, buying is more like it, buying the caucus event in Saturday in Iowa. $30 a ticket to go vote. So Bachmann buys up busloads of people and pays their $30. Jesus, God. Isn't this a great country or what? Huh? I found this at Democratic Underground, written apparently by someone named Johnny Morales. And Johnny writes, one of the fundamental problems with Republican thinking is its totally foreign logic and claims to being simple common sense, while not displaying any common sense at all in what they say or write. None whatsoever. And Morales goes on, now rather than a lengthy point-by-point explanation that would put people to sleep, I have a simple little bit of writing that should allow anyone to understand the grounding in which Republicans root their logic and their reasons. Okay, here you go. Here's a little little word problem for you. A group of 100 Republicans are asked to read a series of simple statements and then give their conclusion as to the overall meaning the statements have. Here are the statements. Vodka and ice will ruin your kidneys. Rum and ice will ruin your liver. Whiskey and ice will ruin your heart. Gin and ice will ruin your brain. Soda and ice will ruin your teeth. After some deliberation, the 100 Republicans were all unanimous as to what this meant overall. Their answer? Ice is a dangerous, toxic substance and should be avoided at all costs. Right. Jesus, God. Isn't that the truth? Hey, Mr. President, you got to wake up, pal. You've got to wake up. Unless you're content to be that one term president that I suggested after the midterm elections, but you didn't follow up on the second part that I suggested, and that's to come out kicking ass and taking names and telling the Republicans and the multi-headed beast that is riding the horse that is the Republican Party now, that would be the teabaggers, that they can kiss your ass and that you are going to do A, B, C, D, and E, and if they don't like it, they can vote against it. But you didn't do it. You didn't do the second part. Well, guess what? Looks like you're going to be a first-term president. Your approval rating is below 40% now. Mr. Obama, wake up. Hello? Wake up. No? Content to sleep? Okay. You know, whatever. And the Republican stable now of presidential candidates, O-T-Paw, Tim Pawlenty, took a look at the results in Iowa, I guess, and said something to the effect of, Jesus, God, I knew these people were crazy, but this crazy? So T-Paw has left the building. Tim Pawlenty has decided that there are other things he can do with his time rather than participate in any of these forums that are going to occur now with these crazy people that are, or that is, the Republican slate of candidates that want to be your president. Someone sent this to me. Zap wrote this. Mike, let's get this straight. In the race so far for the Republican nomination, we have the submissive wife, the creationist, two men who believe Jesus lives on the planet Kolob, the philanderer, and now the Bible-thumping closeted gay governor. Who said conservatives couldn't do comedy? Really? Yeah, you know the stories about Rick Perry. You remember a couple, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when the story broke that one of somebody had walked in on Rick Perry, Governor Rick Perry, and his boyfriend, and they were in a, shall we say, let's try to put this delicately, a compromising position given the attitude toward gay folk in this country. the fact that he was caught in flagrante, is that how you say it? In flagrante delicto? What is the Latin term? In flagrante delicto. I always thought that term sounded real interesting, real inviting, you know? What are you doing tonight? Well, I'm going to do some in flagrante delicto. You are? Woohoo! Anyway, Rick Perry and one of his male staffers caught in flagrante delicto, if that's the right term. And Rick Perry's wife, never hear of Rick Perry's wife, do you? She was extremely, A, mortified, B, pissed off, and C, apparently not very surprised. Okay, not that there's anything wrong with that. As I've said a million times in this program, the what's wrong with that comes from the fact that these people who are usually caught with their male lovers or their male boyfriends, the men who are caught with their male partners, are usually gay bashers, are usually people who, like Rick Perry, comes out against same-sex marriage or full human rights for gay folk in this country and blah, 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 blah. And then it turns out that they themselves are so involved in their self-loathing because they're doing something perfectly natural, perfectly normal, i.e. having a same-sex lover or same-sex partner, but they have been smashed across the face with anti-gay rhetoric their entire lives. So were their parents. So were their grandparents. I mean, this is just, it's become genetic. The anti-gay screaming and frothing at the mouth about what is a perfectly natural circumstance of human sexuality. So here we have Rick Perry now, who is, do the Christians not, do these new apostolic reformation monsters not realize that they are backing a closeted gay man? If they are aware of it, it just deepens the hypocrisy. If you have selected, you apostolic freaks, if you have accepted and chosen a gay man, for heaven's sake, make it public, free from your bigotry and asininity. All the people in this country happen to be homosexual who have to put up with your hatred and your vomiting all over their humanity. Do it, you freaks. You know Rick Perry is got, I don't know if he's, he's just a human sexual animal that includes, apparently, occasional gay sex. That just happens to be his thing. I don't know what his relationship with women is. You never hear anything, do you? Huh? So the scandal on Perry is going to be, and you know this will happen. You know it will happen. When the truth comes out about his cheating on his wife, only the hook this time, well, unlike most of these other Republicans, with some notable exceptions, this guy who cheats on his wife is going to be cheating on his wife with another man. I guess it really doesn't matter. But there you go. The Republican slate so far, the submissive wife. Did you see that when she was asked that question? You know, she's another one of these apostolic reformation freaks, these robotic, I don't know, Jesus is coming and is going to slaughter everybody. Are you familiar with what it says in the book of Revelation about the moment of the return of this monstrous God that these Christians have? I mean, this God that they have is vile. He's cannibalistic. You're not familiar? All right, well, let's do this break and we'll come back and I'll share with you what the submissive wife is in support of. And also the closeted Bible-thumping governor. Well, all of them, really. I mean, they're all Christian. Those two that believe Jesus lives on the planet Kolob. Is it Kolob? That's what the Mormons believe. Kolob? Kolob?
Right.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you.
Anyone past the hour? All right. A Zap emailed me in the Republican field of candidates. Now we have, so far, we have the submissive wife, the creationist, the two men who believe Jesus lives on the planet Kolob, K-O-L-O-B, the philanderer, and now the Bible-thumping, closeted gay governor. Whoever said conservatives couldn't do comedy. Well, in case you're not familiar with Kolob, that's a star or a planet described in Mormon scripture. It's found in the so-called Book of Abraham. No, if you're a Christian, you're not familiar with the Book of Abraham because it doesn't exist except as published by Joseph Smith Jr., the Mormon founder. Joe said it was a translation from Egyptian papyrus through his his translation is not supported by modern Egyptologists or by astronomers or by anybody. But anyway, according to Joe, Kolob is the heavenly body nearest to the throne or residence of God. The Book of Abraham refers to Kolob as a star. It also refers to planets as stars, and therefore some Mormon commentators consider Kolob to be a planet. Kolob has never been identified with any modern astronomical object and is not recognized as an ancient concept within modern Egyptology. The idea appears within Mormon culture, and there's a Mormon hymn about it. Kolob is also the inspiration for the planet Kobol, within the Battlestar Galactica universe, which was created by Glenn Larson, who happens to be Mormon. it just gets screwier and screwier. This is madness. Revelation 19, verses 11 and 21. I realize it's not Wednesday, but you got to hear this. Then I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, the one sitting on it, is called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war. His eyes are like a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems, and he has a name written that no one knows but himself. He is clothed in a robe dipped in blood, and the name by which he is called is the Word of God. And the armies of heaven, arrayed in fine linen, white and pure, were following him on white horses. From his mouth comes a sharp sword. That reminds me of aliens. From his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron. He will tread the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God the Almighty. On his robe and on his thigh he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Then I saw an angel standing in the sun, and with a loud voice he called to all the birds that fly directly overhead, Come, gather for the great supper of God, to eat the flesh of kings, the flesh of captains, the flesh of mighty men, the flesh of horses and their riders, and the flesh of all men, both free and slave, both small and great. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth with their armies gathered to make war against him who was sitting on the horse and against his army. And the beast was captured, and with it the false prophet who in its presence had done the signs by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two men were thrown alive into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur, and the rest were slain by the sword that came out of the mouth of him who is sitting on the horse, and all the birds were gorged with their flesh. Wow, that's really, tell that to your kid, your 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old tonight is kind of a bedtime story. What's right there in the Bible? It's in the book of Revelation. The sword comes out of the mouth, and the birds will eat the flesh of all the corpses. Isn't that pretty? This is one pissed off deity, isn't it? I mean, I've never, I'm not a religious scholar. I took a course in comparative religion. I've never run across a deity created by a group of people that was more insane and murderous and vile and cannibalistic and sick and degenerate than the one depicted in John of Patmos's psychedelic drug fueled vision of Armageddon or Revelation or the apocalypse or something. I mean, how sick is this? And people believe this. People tell this to their children. And you wonder why 70% of America is on a pill of some sort? Holy Christ, it's a wonder we haven't all committed mass suicide. Woo! Here come the beast. Swords coming out of his mouth. Corpses stacked up to heaven. Well, up to Kolob. Kolob? Oh, Jesus. Let me go get a drink while I'm in this break. We'll be right back.
Can't get no connection. Can't get through. Where are you? Well, the night is heavy on his guilty mind. This far from the borderline. When the hitman comes, he knows damn well he has been cheated. And he says, tell my friends who this white eyed son. This is the madhouse. He is my king of my reader's skin.
Before the hour, I'll help him round up all the strays. Yes, indeed. I'll tell you, it is, you don't know whether, I don't know whether to laugh or to cry about what has happened to the Republican Party. It's just astonishing. And now this Rick Perry character? Shudder. Last week, I mentioned the fact that the, Progressive Caucus within the California Democratic Party was proposing a primary challenge to Barack Obama. They would like to see someone from the progressive left, i.e. a real Democrat, challenge Barack Obama in some of the primaries coming up that he will undoubtedly have to participate in. All right? Kind of a Gene McCarthy or a Bobby Kennedy where it concerned LBJ, that kind of thing, all the way back to 68. And of course, we know what happened in 68. Well, some of us do. On July 30th, David Swanson posted this the other day. On July 30th, the Progressive Caucus, California Democratic Party, passed a resolution proposing that a primary challenge be offered to Obama next year. The Progressive Caucus's certification expired at the same time within the California Democratic Party. These various caucuses have to be certified as true members of the California Democratic Party, okay? Other caucuses were routinely recertified that day by the state party. The Progressive Caucus, according to what Swanson has here, he was told by its chairperson, Karen Bernal, the Progressive Caucus would not have been had a vote been held. So the recertification was tabled. And the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party, its status is now in limbo. It no longer exists. But it may yet continue existing. See, this is how mainstream Democrats, and you can hear a lot of them on the radio these days, this is how they punish. No, this is how they destroy their progressive brethren and sistren. This is how the California Democratic Party is attempting. Now, I don't know if this has been resolved yet. This was a couple of days ago. But this is how the California Democratic Party has decided to punish Not discipline, punish, kill, execute the Progressive Caucus within the California Democratic Party. Now, the resolution that got him in trouble is very simple. Listen, whereas the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party recognizes the challenge presented by President Obama's negotiating away Democratic Party principles to extremist Republicans, we are challenged by President Obama in the following ways. His unilateral closed-door budget offer to slash Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which endangers the New Deal and war on poverty safety nets. His determination to escalate U.S. militarism through illegal secret CIA drone attacks and unauthorized wars. His willingness to extend the Bush tax cuts for millionaires and bail out big banks without ending the foreclosure crisis that displaces American working families. His insistence on pushing a health insurance bill which enriches private insurance companies while ignoring growing support for single-payer health care or robust public options. His continuance of President Bush's assault on civil liberties with the extension of the Repressive Patriot Act. His failure to restore due process, including the protection of whistleblowers and habeas corpus. His numerous failures to adhere to international law. We're talking about Obama here. The continuing practice of nationwide FBI raids of anti-war progressive protesters. His decision to increase the arrests and deportations of undocumented workers. His facilitation of the privatizing of the public sphere, which includes education and housing, among others. His disregard of his promises to the labor movement. His failure to adequately protect the environment and adequately address climate change. Now, those are the way the Progressive Caucus of the Democratic Party in California, those are the ways that they enumerate, the ways that they list that Obama has shown himself to be a right-winger. Now, at the same time that's going on, stop and consider. These goddamn monkeys on the right, these Republican psychopaths, refer to him as a socialist. And say he's anti-business, he's anti-the privatization, that he's a socialist. This will show you, aside from the religious goofballery, nutbaggery, this should show you how removed Republicans are from anything remotely smelling like reality. He's a socialist? I'm telling you, these right-wing Republicans, but I'm being redundant here, these Republicans exist in some alternate universe where up is down and left is right, and an absolute right-winger like Barack Obama is presented to these brain-dead sons of bitches, like, for example, who would sit there and get sexually aroused by Rick Perry or creeped out by Michelle Bachmann. Obama's presented as a socialist. Oh, my God. Anyway, back to the petition or the resolution from the progressive wing of the California Democratic Party, which may or may not exist anymore. Whereas the Progressive Caucus, the California Democratic Party, recognizes the historical significance of the Eugene McCarthy, Robert F. Kennedy anti-war challenge to President Lyndon Johnson. The challenge followed President Johnson's decision to escalate U.S. military involvement in Vietnam, betraying his campaign promise to end a war that polarized America. Similarly, we recognize the danger and betrayal that the current so-called grand bargain represents to the legacy of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's signature gift to all Americans, Social Security and the New Deal, a point of pride for all Democrats. Whereas the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party is committed to the understanding that an interest in a 2012 Democratic primary, presidential primary challenge will not interfere with President Obama's ability to govern and not limit his ability to do so in ways that include invoking constitutional options, we recognize that this will, in fact, raise debate on important issues without risking the ability to mobilize and energize the base of the Democratic Party to elect a triumphant leader to counter the far-right agenda. Therefore, be it resolved to make our views heard. The Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party will begin the process of contacting other Democratic organizations, Democratic Party members, and public organizations that share our views on the issues and which seek to alter the course of history by exploring other steps to elect a necessary change, including the possible primary challenge to President Obama. That's the resolution. That's it. The resolution in support of a possible 2012 Democratic presidential primary challenge to Obama. And for that, what does the resolution include? A list of instances that the Progressive Caucus sees as a betrayal of not just Democratic Party principles, but of campaign promises and stated goals and ideas that Obama put forward when he was running for president. Very clearly, if you can argue with any one of those, his decision to increase the arrests and deportations of undocumented workers, for example, over a million people, do you realize this? A million people have been rounded up and thrown out of this country since Obama took office. That, what is that? 1,000 times, 10 times, a million times? I have no idea. It's way more than during the 8 years of the Bush crime family. That's just one example. So, the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party simply lays out their case against Obama as not being someone they can support. And they list why. And then they say, okay, we might decide to offer up a primary challenge to the president. And what happens? It's like the bad old days of Stalinism. It's like the bad old days of CPUSA when it was run by the Stalinists. What happens? The Progressive Caucus is told to get the hell out of town. Get out of town! And the California Democratic Party displays something that should give pause to any Democrat in California who is going to follow what the Democratic Party in California tells you to do. If the Democratic Party in California or any state cannot contain within its ranks a progressive caucus, I mean, the whole damn party used to be progressive, right? And now a progressive caucus is deemed a threat? What the hell has happened to this country?
Faces to the floor,
and
every day the paper boy brings more.
Yeah, I opened the New York Times Sunday morning, and there was a collage of four or five pictures from the that event in Ames, Iowa. And there is a picture of her weirdness, Michelle Obama. What? Michelle, which one is it? Bachman. Sounds like Obama, Bachman, Osama bin Bachman. I don't know. It's getting crazy! Al Gore, last week, he was at the Aspen Institute in Colorado. There's a forum there titled Networks on Citizenship. And it, one of the reasons Al Gore dropped in was to, rail against corporate evildoers who put profit above society, at Real Aspen. Publication out there. The writer Troy Hooper writes, Gore referenced the book Merchants of Doubt, how a handful of scientists obscured the truth on issues from tobacco smoke to global warming. And this book, Merchants of Doubt, tells how petroleum, steel, utilities, and other industries enlisted lobbyists to cloud the climate debate. And Gore recalled how not long ago, tobacco giants, quote, succeeded in delaying the implementation of the Surgeon General's report for 40 years. 40 years. In every one of those 40 years, the average number of Americans killed by cigarettes each year exceeded the total number of Americans killed in all of World War II. 450,000 per year. My sister was one of them. It was evil, evil, evil. End quote. Al Gore. He and I share that. My sister died at age 58. My sister of lung cancer. And it was the damnedest thing. She's having trouble breathing. I'm talking about my sister, not Al Gore's sister. My sister was having trouble breathing. And this is back when Molly was 6 months old, and she was looking forward, my sister was looking forward to meeting Molly. And she called me. My sister called me a couple of times. She said she was having trouble breathing. She had a thyroid condition because she lived in the Midwest, what used to be, I don't know what it's called now, but a goiter. And her physician said, you got to get this removed, Gene, because it's going to impede your airway in your throat. Well, she thought that was the problem. Thyroid condition. So her husband, my former brother-in-law, the naval officer, took her to an emergency clinic. And they examined her and sent her home. The next night, they took her again. My brother-in-law took her again. And this happened to be a Sunday night. And Monday morning, they diagnosed her with a very aggressive form of lung cancer. And 4 days later, she was dead. 4 days. And I think about that a lot. I think about the fact that my sister never had a chance to be Molly's aunt. Kathy loved my sister. They had a great relationship. And I think about how these sons of bitches who knew all along that cigarette smoking will kill you. Does it kill everyone who smokes? No. You want to play the Russian roulette? Go ahead. But it will kill you. What was this statistic I read one time? 90% of people who die of lung cancer were smokers. 9 out of 10 were smokers. However, only 1 out of every 10 smokers gets lung cancer. So if you want to roll those odds, if you want to take a 10% chance that you're going, now that doesn't include the other forms of cancer. We're only talking about lung cancer. Cigarette smoking also causes cancer to about 6 or 7 other vital organs. But never mind. I'm getting off. Never mind. He was talking about how even scientists can be taken in, paid enough money, and they will lie through their teeth. He said the same model of media manipulation that went down with cigarette smoking was transported whole cloth into the climate debate. He said, quote, and some of the exact same people, I can go down a list of their names, are involved in this. And so what do? They pay pseudoscientists to pretend to be scientists to put out the message, this climate thing, it's nonsense. Man-made CO2 doesn't trap heat. It may be volcanoes. Bullsh... blank, Gore said. It may be sunspots. Bullsh... blank, Gore said. It's not getting warmer, they say. Bullsh... blank, Al Gore said. And then he added, when you go and talk to any audience about climate, you hear them washing back at you the same crap over and over and over again. There's no longer a shared reality on an issue like climate, even though the very existence of our civilization is threatened. People have no idea. It's no longer acceptable in mixed company, meaning bipartisan companies, to use the goddamn word climate. They have polluted to the point where we cannot possibly come to an agreement on it. End quote. Al Gore, who's also getting pissed off. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.